Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and Howard Wolfson is my next guest, a longtime aide to Hillary Clinton. He was communications director for her presidential campaign this year. He now writes a campaign blog for the New Republic called The Flack. And funny enough, in his blog post last Friday morning, he accused McCain of running on tactics rather than strategy. That night, McCain accused Obama in the debate of not knowing the difference between tactics and strategy. Coincidence? Howard Wolfson, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
How are you? Good to be back.
Do you know the difference between tactics and strategy?
Well, I can't say that I've always carefully employed the distinction in campaigns that I've run, but I think winning campaigns always manage to figure out the difference.
What is the difference?
Well, a strategy is having an overarching thematic message that guides everything the campaign does and says. And I think one of the things that Barack Obama has done so well in this campaign he has been talking about change since day one. Every day he and his campaign wake up and say, how can we talk about change today and how can we make our opponents seem like more of the same? And it may seem simple, it may sound easy, but he's the one who did it. It's more complicated than it sounds. He doesn't get thrown off. It's his game. And it guides all of the tactics because he's got the strategy down. John McCain, on the other hand, he doesn't really have an overarching message. If you ask 10 people on the street what Barack Obama stood for, most of them would be able to say he stands for change. It's hard to really figure out what John McCain stands for. And as a result, his staff, which is talented, is forced every day to scramble and improvise and figure out how they move the ball down the field on any given moment.
So he gets up, as you wrote in your post, and tries to figure out how to win the day, whereas you're saying Obama is trying to figure out how to win the election with this consistent message, and you wrote that that's what led to McCain's decision to try to cancel the debate or threaten to delay the debate last Friday if they didn't come up with a bailout bill, a solution to the crisis, because that was just a momentary decision on how to win the day.
Exactly.
But to your point about what Obama has as a consistent message, I mean, we could go down a lot of policies, and we're doing them on our 30 Issues in 30 Days series, you know, one major topic at a time all month. But just to say change is his consistent strategy. Well, you ran Hillary Clinton's campaign. Clinton supporters were saying for 6 months, well, change what? Change what to what? You got to get specific. You can't just run on change.
We did say that, and as many of your listeners know, we tried to counter change with experience. And I think change was a more powerful message than experience. It certainly proved to be in our primary. Our primary, in the end, was remarkably close, but at the period of time when we were arguing experience to Barack Obama's change, he was beating us, I think, in that comparison. And again, it may seem simple, right? It's easy to say change. You could tell the mood of the country is bad. Why wouldn't you say change? But he's the one who's done it, and his campaign is very closely associated with it. And so he has to figure out how to fill in those blanks to describe what the change is. I think he's done that. He's really pivoted well since the convention. His convention speech had an awful lot of policy component to it, an awful lot of specifics. I was in Philadelphia yesterday. I saw some of the advertising there. His ads are very specific in terms of what he would do from a policy perspective as president. So he's filling in those
blanks.
And
isn't it funny, and it's kind of how the punditocracy works, how Obama got slammed for being too general talking about change and yes, we can and all of that in the past. And then after the convention speech, which was so policy specific, he was getting slammed for giving too much of an old-fashioned Democratic policy speech.
That is true, and I noted that myself, and it is ridiculous. And I think one of the things that his campaign has done well, among others, is that they have avoided a lot of the knee-jerk reactions that some politicians and their staff have to the punditocracy. They've been helped by the fact that they are in Chicago. They are not in the Washington, D.C. Echo chamber, and they note the hand wringing from time to time, but they are not they do not fall victim to it.
Yeah, it is interesting when you're not in Washington or not in New York, just as our political director, Andrea Bernstein, was out in Pennsylvania and Virginia and Missouri over the last 2 weeks, and she says people out there are just not reacting to the financial situation as a personal crisis in the way that people are in New York. And so, you know, whether that is true or not, or whether that makes sense or not, is another matter. But I guess there is some different perspective to be gained by basing your campaign in Chicago. Of course, I always thought, and I said it many times during the primaries, that Obama had the paradox of running at once as the postpartisan candidate and running to the left of Hillary as, you know, the more progressive Democrat and at the same time the postpartisan candidate, which sort of didn't add up. McCain now has the problem of running as the real conservative and also running as the reform candidate who's going to change things from Bush and trying to have that both ways. So both candidates really have their fundamental paradoxes in their messages, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know, Obama had the advantage of being to the left of us on the war as a result of the fact that he opposed it originally. And that's, if you think about it, that's really what gives him the sense that he was to the left of Hillary. I mean, Hillary was to the left of him in terms of health care, and there are other issues where Hillary was to the left of him. So if you look at the issues issue by issue, he really wasn't to the left of Hillary, but on the issue that so many Democrats cared so passionately about, he was, and that was the one that mattered, and I think that helped him get defined as to her left. The truth is, I don't think he really was.
Talking politics with Howard Wolfson right now, former communications director to the Hillary Clinton campaign. Looking at the post-debate polls, Howard, McCain now seems to have held his own pretty well after Friday night, despite the pundit consensus that Obama won because neither of them made any major gaffes and Obama came in with the lead, so he goes out with the lead. McCain seems to have gained among women and independents, the swing voters, after the debate. What do you make of it?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure which polls you're referring to.
ABC, Washington Post yesterday,
gained a
mostly.
Couple. There are a batch of polls out of the Quinnipiac today out of Ohio and Florida and Pennsylvania that actually has Obama up in those states. I think that this election really turned in a dramatic way towards Obama's favor once the collapse of Wall Street occurred. And I think it's for a reason that ought to hearten progressives and hearten Democrats. You know, let's put aside the fact that Obama's run a really good campaign as a really good candidate. There are also obviously long-term historical trends at work here. And for 100 years, Democrats and Republicans have been arguing about the proper role of government in the marketplace. Obviously, Democrats favor more oversight and Republicans less. And the public knows that. I mean, that's a fundamental distinction between the parties. We've been having the argument with one another for a very long time. And at different points in our history, the pendulum swings back and forth. So in 1980, Ronald Reagan is a good candidate. He runs a good campaign. He's very charismatic. But he wins also because the public felt that government had gotten too big. Well, now here we are in 2008, and the American public has seen the implications and the results of the Republican mania for deregulation. It's playing out in front of their eyes. And so a lot of what has boosted Obama in the last couple of weeks is the fact that the public is sick of the Republican philosophy, and they don't think that it's worked. And that has helped him tremendously. It's like, you know, I'm on shows with Republicans, and they say, well, Obama has benefited from the conversation and the economy. Well, that's not a natural law of nature. I mean, there are times in our history when Republicans have benefited from a conversation about the economy, like 1980. It is a function of the electorate turning on this issue.
Let me get some listener comments for you here. One person writes, I'm not a McCain fan nor a fan of the bailout, but had McCain not suspended his campaign, quote unquote, the bailout would have gone through pretty much as King Paulson wanted it initially. Unfortunately, this campaign has become so toxic on both sides that few are able to acknowledge a sensible idea or comment without spinning it to extreme rotations. Do you agree with the basic idea there that had McCain not done his thing last week on this, that the bailout would have gone through?
There were some who argued that at the time. I mean, I think it will be difficult to ever really know. I thought that McCain made a tactical error in associating himself so closely with the bailout package that eventually went down. He suspended his campaign. He rode into Washington on a white horse. He was going to work with House Republicans to get this thing through, putting politics aside. He invested himself in the process, although once he was there, he didn't really have anything much to say. He didn't have a proposal of his own. He went to the White House meeting that he instigated and was largely silent. The package went down, and I think he was associated with that failure. So I think that he made a big mistake in getting this involved in the
right.
bailout package negotiations.
Right. Well, failure from the point of view of the leaders, success with the point of view of 70% of the voters as of right now. Here, I was going to ask you this question, but there are about 15,000 listeners lining up to ask you this question. So here is Max in Manhattan for Howard Wolfson, former communications director for the Hillary Clinton campaign, now blogging the campaign at the New Republic website. Hi, Max.
Hi. Brian, I wanted to ask Mr. Wolfson about the concern that people are having that Bill Clinton is somehow sabotaging the election. The idea that he's not speaking emphatically enough in support of Obama. And, you know, I saw Bill Clinton talking about McCain on The View, and he seemed, I understand the need to be conciliatory and, appreciate what McCain's gone through in terms of his experience in his service. But, there's been a lot of comments from Bill Clinton lately, and one person wrote on Huffington Post that if we lose this election, we'll know why, and that we're not going to forgive Bill Clinton. So I thought maybe he could talk about the Clintons' roles in terms of, why isn't Hillary going after Sarah Palin?
Okay, two questions there. Bill Clinton and why isn't Hillary going after Sarah Palin?
Yes. Let me take the second one first. The Hillary has been all over the country for Barack Obama. She has gone everywhere that he has asked her to go. I think she was in Michigan most recently over the weekend. She has been now, I think, to nearly every swing state on his behalf. She has started an initiative on her own website called Hillary Sent Me, which is attempting to get her volunteers and her supporters organized on behalf of Obama and send them to places where Hillary did well on behalf of Obama. We've raised money, Senator Clinton has, for Barack Obama. I don't think you could point to anyone in recent history that, as a defeated candidate, not on the ticket, has done more for the candidate at the top of the ticket than Hillary Clinton.
We probably don't see in the press, and I didn't know about it until you just said it. I assume it's true since you said it, that Hillary Clinton has been to so many swing states. You certainly don't see that on the nightly news or on CNN or on MSNBC every day. But I did see Senator Clinton in Rochester 2 weeks ago talking about the sexism that she has seen in some of the coverage of Sarah Palin. And I thought, why even go there? Then just say, we'll talk about sexism in December. Right now, all I have to say is Palin stands for everything against women that I stood for, or something like that. Why even go there? Is there a subtle mixed message?
Well, I guess it depends how much of a problem you think sexism is in this country, and I think Senator Clinton thinks that it's a problem. She wasn't accusing the Obama campaign of sexism. I don't think the Obama campaign has engaged in any sexism whatsoever against Sarah Palin. I do think that some of the media coverage of her, at least initially, focusing on whether she was able to balance her family with her responsibilities was sexist. And I think if you are somebody who cares about the role of women in society, there's nothing wrong with pointing that out. But let me just say, Hillary Clinton is going to get criticized regardless of what she does on any circumstance. She gave a magnificent speech at the convention. She gave a magnificent speech pulling out of the campaign. She's done more than anyone, in my opinion, has done in recent memory to support the nominee, even though she's not on the ticket. So if people want to fault what she's done, they are looking to find fault.
How should Biden debate Sarah Palin? How can he avoid becoming the Rick Lazio of 2008?
Well, don't rush over with papers in your hand and start screaming and demand that she sign them.
That's number one.
For people who remember the Lazio-Clinton debate. I think he needs to remember that he's not there to debate Sarah Palin, but he's there to really make the case against John McCain. Sarah Palin has had a very rough couple of weeks. I thought she gave a very good speech at her convention. She had a good introduction. It's been all downhill since then. The Katie Couric interview was disastrous. Sarah Palin may well disqualify herself Thursday night. I don't think Joe Biden needs to help her in that regard. He just needs to be respectful and to know that, remind himself that his real opponent and the person he's really making the case against is Joe Biden.
You know, there are dropout rumors pertaining to both vice presidential nominees. Obviously, Palin, with as much criticism as now she's getting, even from Republican, very conservative commentators, David Frum, Kathleen Parker, is that her name, and a number of others, really on the right, really supporting the Republicans and the Republican ticket, but who say Sarah Palin should drop out. You know, George Will has been brutal. But there are also still people saying, and there was an L.A. Times blog post on this just today or yesterday, that it's possible that Joe Biden, with all the gaffes that he's been making, may decide to drop out over some contrived health reason after the debate Thursday night. And then guess who would join the ticket who you used to work for?
I think that's ridiculous. There is a 0% chance of that happening. I think Joe Biden has done a very good job as Barack Obama's running mate. I don't think there would be any reason or cause for him to drop out. I think there is, as I said, endless fascination with Hillary Clinton. Maybe there are people who miss her, you know, being a part of this process in that way. But she is not going to be on the ticket, and there's no reason for her to be, and there's no reason for Joe Biden to drop out.
And Sarah Palin, see any chance of it?
Well, it would be such a huge admittance of poor judgment on the part of Barack Obama that it's hard to imagine.
You mean of McCain?
I mean, I'm sorry, of McCain, that it would be hard to imagine it. I mean, it would essentially say that in the most important decision that he had to make while a nominee, he blew it. So I think he's kind of stuck with her. And look, she does bring some positives to the ticket. And
there is a certain base she's going to bring out that McCain wasn't going to get previously.
No question. And I think that there are some women that she appeals to, not women who voted for Hillary in Manhattan. But, you know, we have a lot of supporters in places like Western Pennsylvania and Southern Ohio and West Virginia who don't ideologically look like Hillary supporters in New York City. So, I mean, she may be appealing to some to some of them, but she's going to be on the ticket, and Joe Biden's going to be on the ticket.
All right, last thing before you go, Howard Wolfson, former communications director for the Hillary Clinton campaign, on the politics of the bailout bill and what comes next. Here is why House Minority Leader John Boehner said so many Republicans voted against it.
The Speaker had to give a partisan voice that poisoned our conference, caused the number of members that we thought we could get to go south.
Nancy Pelosi poisoned the environment. Here's the clip of Nancy Pelosi that he was referring to. She's talking about Bush.
When President Bush took office, he inherited President Clinton's surpluses 4 years in a row, budget surpluses, on a trajectory of $5.6 trillion in surplus. And with his reckless economic policies, within 2 years, he had turned that around.
So that was right in the midst of trying to get this sensitive vote. Here, by the way, is Barney Frank. He was very funny coming back from Boehner's attack, saying, wait, people are going to vote to destroy the economy of the country because they didn't like something Nancy Pelosi said about Bush. And then Barney Frank said this.
I'll make an offer. Give me those 12 people's names, and I will go talk uncharacteristically nicely to them.
What do you make of all that, Howard Wolfson?
Well, you know, there was an interview that I saw with Congressman Pence, who's one of the leading Republican members of the House from Indiana, who basically said, look, we didn't blow this bill up because anything Nancy Pelosi said. We did it because we had ideological disagreements with it, and I think that was an honest answer that he gave.
Even if Barney Frank was right, what was Pelosi doing at a moment of super delicate negotiations on the biggest thing since FDR, inserting that kind of attack onto the floor?
Well, I should admit I'm somewhat biased on this subject. My wife has worked for Speaker Pelosi for a very long time.
Thank you for disclosing.
Yes, the failure here. This is how these things work. On difficult bills that need to pass, that the leadership of both parties are for, but that they know they may have a hard time getting their rank and file to go along, they sit down, and Pelosi and Boehner, and say, look, I can get X number of my members to go down on the floor if you can get X number of your members to go down the floor and vote for it. And they basically commit to one another that they will supply a certain number of votes from their respective caucuses because nobody on the Democratic side will want to vote for it if all of the Republicans vote no and vice versa. And the Democrats fulfilled the bargain that had been arranged. Nancy Pelosi came down and the Democrats voted about 2/3 in favor of the bill.
Right, and the Republicans voted 1/3 in favor of the bill.
And
so
that's the problem.
We have under a minute. What will it take, in your opinion, to get the House, to pass a version of it now? We have this, never seen before, Jeb Henseling, Dennis Kucinich, right-left axis, accounting for a majority of the members.
I think that raising the FDIC limit to $250,000 so that accounts are insured up to that amount would be helpful. I think they're going to have to make some other tweaks to the bill so that people have face savings so that they can say that some changes were made and that's why they changed their vote. They don't need that many votes. And so I think that they'll look and see what tweaks can they make to the bill to get, 6 or 7 more votes on each side. And I think they should be able to come up with that.
Howard Wolfson, former communications director to the Hillary Clinton for President campaign. He is now blogging the campaign for the New Republic, his blog on the New Republic website called The Flack. Howard, thank you very much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll stay with the fiscal crisis, the financial crisis, in a minute and talk about some other aspects of it, including why perhaps you should be more concerned with the LIBOR than with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. We'll explain what the LIBOR is if you don't know, and why Ireland, went much further than the United States in bailing out or rescuing its banks over the last day. We'll tell you the extraordinary step that Ireland took in a minute.